हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 81. The Supreme Personality of Godhead concluded, Indra, you may now go, excuse my order, execute my order, and remain in your appointed position as King Indra, but be sober without false pride. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, Indra requests, then give me mercy so that I may stay in Braja. Krishna responds, go to your place, may there be safety for you. Krishna released him from fear. For real devotees, however, this is not safety. Seeing Indra reluctant to go, Krishna said, go there, you should follow my order. Since you are unqualified, your staying here would produce more offense. Going is better. Indra responds, O Lord, even if I go, I will commit offense, since that is the nature of having powers. Krishna replies, do as I have instructed, remain in your qualified position, not in that of others. What to speak of the position of the people of Braja, my intimate associates? Act with no inattention or with bhakti yoga, yuktahi, and without pride or with devotees. So if he gives up, he's very attentive to his duties and does them without pride, then they'll go nicely. But if he does with devotional service in the association of devotees, then the devotional will go nicely. You understand? So there's a technique for making whatever you're doing go properly, so therefore the proper attention and lack of pride. But if we want it to go become devotional, then one has to have that mood of devotion in the association of devotees. That will make it work. Right? So, yes. Mother Sarabi's request. Yes.
So, Krishna, at this particular moment, he sends Indra away, and then that means that for him, for Indra, it's not going to be beneficial to stay in that association of devotees.
No. Because then the point is he has his position, he works good in a position where he has authority and that kind of environment. That's where he's comfortable. That's why we see Krishna didn't remove that. He took away the ingredients of the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise he could have removed his position or this or that, but he didn't. He just removed so he didn't get the benefit of the sacrifice, and then he got annoyed from that. Right? So... He wouldn't prosper in Braj. He needs that environment where he feels he's doing something in that. That's why it's important that everyone's engaged according to their nature. That's the whole idea. Is that you have a nature to do something, then that's what you have to be doing. Like someone's a manager, they have to manage. Someone's a cook, they need to cook. Someone's a preacher, they need to preach. That's how they'll get purified. So only if they've lost the confidence in that to do that, then you give association till they can... feel that confidence again, and then they take up that service. Is that... So, for him, he wouldn't prosper in this Braja environment, because it's just simple and all that, just based on that affection. There's no great display of powers and this and that. So he wouldn't be comfortable, though. Right? Otherwise, how did he become Indra? He put in the effort to get that position.
So for ourselves, Rupa Goswami recommends Swajati association,
yes.
Would it be different for Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama, or it's always the same?
The principle. The principle is Swajati.
Swajati.
No, that would always be the same. But the point is that Swajati, and then within that Swajati, you associate with those who are more advanced.
Yeah.
So the principle is always going to be the same. Like, who does Mother Jashoda hang out with?
Nanda Baba.
And?
You know, her friends.
Yeah, and who are?
The elderly gopis.
Yeah, so is that Swajati or?
Yeah.
So it always applies. You know, the Vaikunthawallas hang out with the Vaikunthawallas, the Dwarkawallas with Dwarkawallas, like that. So it's pretty standard. So therefore, those who are interested, like, you know, those who are worshippers of Krishna as worshippers of Lord Chaitanya, then we associate with them, right? Then, you know, within Parampara, within them, then within those who have given the instructions according to the founder Acharya, like that. And so then we choose our association. But, giving this benediction was not really mercy, but merely instruction with logic, since Indra was not otherwise capable, since he did not have the potential for complete mercy. By not following the Lord's instructions, Indra would again commit offense. That is revealed when Krishna took the Parijata tree. So we'll get into that in the Dwarka Leela. You know, which is just for the demigods a few days later. You know, some weeks later. So it's just whenever that intense thing comes up, then he forgets. So that's why this is all the more mercy he could gain from the Lord in that. That's all the more he could appreciate. Joy. So you situate someone according to what they can handle. You deal with them. They push how much they can handle. You don't push more, but you don't push less. Right? So that's the whole point of that's what leadership is about, is finding that position, how much can be handled, how much works. Yes.
This is another difficulty, is that Krishna does always everything perfect. He gives exact amount.
Yes.
But for ourselves, it's either less or more. But then if we take those two, which is, you know, less detrimental.
Less, you could say, is less detrimental, but at the same time, as they won't necessarily advance, they'll move slower. But the point is just if we understand the purpose is that everybody, we ourselves and others become Krishna conscious, then looking at that, then we can be a little more attentive. That's why he says he has to be attentive in doing his duties. You know, if we're attentive without pride, if we have pride, then we think whatever I'm doing is already perfect. So if whatever I'm doing is already perfect, I may not pay attention. Right? So if I'm attentive, then I see to the details, but when it's without pride, that's when I'll actually move nicely. I can do the work nicely, even if I'm proud, if I'm attentive. But a lot of times, as pride increases, because that increases the illusion, then we tend to be less attentive. That's always what happens. The more proud someone becomes, they become less attentive. So at some point they make a mistake and then the whole thing falls apart. Like that. Yes. So, so, if we apply those, then the skill will go well. But we always have to remember in that attentiveness that it's also attentive for pleasing Krishna. It has that devotional aspect of pleasing Krishna. Then that will make that actually proper. So not only does it go nicely on the temporary level, but it also goes nicely on the spiritual, on the eternal level. Then if we lack the pride, we can properly associate with devotees. Because if we're too proud, we also can't associate with devotees. We can't get the benefit. Yes.
Do Doesn't attentiveness show there's consciousness involved?
Attentiveness, yes, there's consciousness involved. Because otherwise, then we just go on with the idea that everything's going all right anyway, and you just kind of sit back and enjoy. Because attentiveness means that you're applying applying knowledge. But enjoyment means you don't have to apply any knowledge. You just appreciate. So, yeah, so, yes. So then it's complete. If the both of those are there, then it will go nicely.
So like you about say about enjoyment and try of consciousness.
Yes.
So So is it necessary we should have some time for enjoyment?
Is it necessary we should, since we mentioned the word enjoyment, and that, seeing that that is the, how you say, one of the most important of the Purusharthas, we would say it's the first, but because we're devotees, we have to at least place it just behind, you know, devotional service. So yeah.
Means we also need some relax, you know, because if too intense, we cannot, I mean, last for a long time.
Well, it depends upon what we call intensity. You know, I mean, for each individual. So for the individual, yes. But we have to understand is that that volume of intensity will be different for different people. You know, it's like we mentioned, Napoleon, he would sleep, I think, 2 hours a day, and he was fine. So that means 22 hours he was intense. That's how he...
Huh?
Yeah, yes, like that. So it's a matter of what you yourself can deal with. So, but it has to be a balance. Now Krishna says in the Gita that work and relaxation, they have to be balanced. But it's not about enjoyment, it's just about, you know, what will balance the other aspects, that intensity. But the purpose has to be about the intensity, not about the relaxing. You know what I'm saying? Because, in other words, recreation is for what purpose? So that you can appreciate and perform your work. Right? So it's not an end in itself. Does that make sense? Yeah, because if we see, okay, the person works his whole life to get money so that he can just relax and enjoy life when he retires. But generally they find that it's boring. So relaxing has a limit. Relaxing is only valuable in how much it allows you to be engaged in activity. But, so in the Vedic, they don't stop doing activity. They switch it for karmic activity to spiritual. You understand? So the focus, rather than being on the practical things of day-to-day life, is focused on the spiritual. So you're always active like that. Does that make sense? Then you may vary the activities you do, but they're all connected to Krishna. So being relaxed doesn't mean that it has to be something that's not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, like someone likes to, let's say, relax and they'll read. So then they'll, you know, read Bhagavatam. Or they like to cook, so then they'll cook something for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Sometimes we think it's, you know, too much Krishna.
That's there. Yeah, Prabhupada mentions that sometimes the soul becomes tired, so then they want to relax from all this working on the platform of the soul and just kind of, how you say, let's just take the blue pill and just relax back into that comfortable ignorance. Yeah, so then we see that devotees will take a little hiatus of 10, 20 years, and then, you know, they figure out that it's still overrated. You know, that means they didn't find satisfaction before, and then so then they took up Krishna consciousness, then they figured out some new ways that maybe it would work out, and after 10, 20 years they figure out, well, actually it's not. And then they get back into Krishna consciousness. So it does happen. So you just have to find a balance so that it's always progressive. So in a day you figure out. But it's not that the emphasis is on the relaxation. It's the relaxation is necessary so you can be Krishna conscious. Not that, oh, it's so much Krishna conscious, now we have to relax. He said the focus is on the relaxing. It's got to be on Krishna conscious. So I need to relax so that I can do like that. If I spend a little time like this, you know, relax, then I can rest properly, I can get up in the morning, then I can, you know, perform my japa and everything nicely, you know. So you find what works for you. But the focus has to be on the Krishna conscious part, not on the relaxed part. Doesn't mean that we're not good at relaxing. It just means that we know that the relaxing is for the benefit of the Krishna consciousness. Not that Krishna consciousness is good for relaxing. You know what I'm saying? In fact, I put it here. You understand? Because that's karma. I use devotional service to get material benefit. But we engage material benefit for devotional service. So we can see that way it's progressive. So even though I may be, okay, I have to go on a vacation, I got to do this and that, that's fine as long as the purpose of that vacation is so you can get back into your service. Then that's okay. Yeah. But if I do my service so that, you know, I can, then they'll give me a facility that I can go on vacation, then that's not exactly why one should come to Krishna consciousness. Is that what it says? So the balance must be there, but you have to know which is primary, which is secondary.
Yeah. Similar question was asked to you once, that is there a concept of vacation from Krishna consciousness? Your answer was that, yeah, the material world is that place where you come
to take vacation. Yeah, for vacation.
It's not so bad.
Like that, so, yeah, you're already on vacation. Is that
right?
Yes, sir? No. Okay. Verses 18 to 21, Mother Sarabi's request. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Mother Sarabi, along with her progeny, the cows, then offered her obeisances to Lord Krishna. Respectfully requesting his attention, the gentle lady addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was present before her as a cowherd boy. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Then Sarabi approached. She had intended that Indra first speak privately with Krishna. She offered respects completely, with prayers and surrendered along with her offspring, just as Krishna appeared in the Moon Dynasty with his eternal associates. Sarabi appeared with her constant associates, a multitude of cows. Not only did she offer respects, but prayed, Upamantriya, for his complete attention, when calling his name in the next verse. She revealed her desires because she had the form of a cowherd, Gopa Rupinam. Oh, because he had the form of a cowherd, Gopa Rupinam. She offered respects because he was the Lord, Ishwaram. Why did she not plead on his behalf first to help Indra? She was wise, Manasvini. She desired personally to witness the omniscience and generous nature of the Lord and Indra's confession. And, as well, considering the special nature of her quest, she did not speak first. So then all these considerations would be there. So it would work out very nicely. So that's why the etiquette is there, the culture is there, so that one knows how to do things in the proper way. Mother Sarabi said, O Krishna, Krishna, greatest of mystics, O soul and origin of the universe, you are the master of the world, and by your grace, O infallible Lord, we have you as our master. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Out of joy, she called out twice to Krishna, you are called Mahayogi because you protected my offspring by lifting Govardhan, using your strength of yoga. We have accepted you as our master, because what use is Indra, who tried to destroy my offspring? Mother Sarabi continued, you are our worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the Brahmins, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra. O soul of the universe, you descend in this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Sarabi said, As you are Indra, we will install you in the role of Indra with Abhishek. Krishna responded, by whose order do you want to do this? Is it some independent desire? Sarabhi replied, it has been ordered by Brahma. When Indra was afflicted with fear and went to Brahma and explained everything, Brahma, remembering his previous offense, fearfully thinking, gave me this order. Right, because Brahma had already committed, so being afraid of that. O Sarabhi, you are very dear to the Lord, who protects your offspring. Therefore you should go to Krishna, the ocean of mercy, and get Indra forgiven for his offense, and perform Abhishek, installing him as Indra for the cows. What is the benefit of this Abhishek for becoming Indra, king of the cows, to you, whose hard to attain feet are served by Shiva and Brahma, and who is the Indra, king of billions of universes? It is an action only for the purpose of elevating us. You appear to relieve the burden of the world, though you are the soul of the universe, and therefore invisible. If you do not appear, how could we get good fortune? Right, so establishing Krishna as the Indra of the cows, then that's the position he's already in, but then of what benefit does Krishna get? Technically, he doesn't get. It's the cows get the benefit. Right? So in other words, they're doing it for their own benefit, meaning that their own good fortune being connected to Krishna. So if he's the Indra of the cows, then that connects the cows to Krishna. Then they will benefit by this connection. So by seeing him as their Lord rather than Indra as the Lord, then they will get more benefit. Because seeing Indra as the Lord, we see it didn't work out so good. Right? So actually, Sarabhi has to come and save Indra. Like that. And so therefore, he becomes that. So this is the fun part. Oh, wow, this is something else. This happens before. In one of the things, how Krishna arranges it, Indra gets saved by the very people he's trying to give difficulty to. So he was giving difficulty to the cows, but he has to be saved by Sarabhi. So that actually even puts it into a more kind of thing. So then that aspect of that, she saves him, then that makes his pride even less. And then you had that one time in fighting Vritrasura. Then he had to get the bones of Didichi. And he had insulted Didichi before. So now he has to go to him and get Didichi's blessings to actually be able to defeat Vritrasura. So we see Krishna always kind of arranges it interestingly. Verses 22 to 48. Why is this always falling off? The Abhishek ceremony of Sri Govinda. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus appealed to Lord Krishna, Mother Sarabhi performed his bathing ceremony with her own milk. And Indra, ordered by Aditi and other mothers of the demigods, anointed the Lord with heavenly Ganga water from the trunk of Indra's elephant carrier, Airavata. Thus, in the company of the demigods and great sages, Indra coronated Lord Krishna, the descendant of Dasarha, and gave him the name Govinda. Right, so that makes him the Lord of the cows. Srila right? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, praying to Krishna to accept the post of Indra, Sarabhi then bathed Krishna in her milk. Then Indra, ordered by Aditi and other heavenly mothers, bathed Krishna. Indra, thinking himself a fallen servant, first remained standing there, and only after being ordered by Aditi and others, taking their order as qualification, he performed the bathing. Right? Because if you have the order, that the qualification goes along with it. So Prabhupada makes that point. When the spiritual master gives an order, he gives the ability along with it. But it's still we have to apply it. It's not that the ability will do it on its own. It's that we have to apply it. Like a cook has the ability to cook, but unless he cooks, you don't get something cooked. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that we... I guess it was one of those. They say, you know, like the... This town ain't big enough for the both of us, so the shoulder is not big enough for the both of us. The chudder goes. Okay. So he felt himself unqualified, so he just stood there on the side. But then when he was ordered by his mother and the other senior ladies of the spiritual world, I mean of the heavenly planets, then he took that as his qualification, because the order is there. Otherwise, you could say, no, I'm not qualified, I'm this and that, and then not do it. But that's not what it's for. If an order is given, then that means then the ability to do it is given along with it. We just have to apply it. Though Krishna was known as belonging to the Dasarha lineage of the Yadu dynasty, because he had a greater desire to be a cowherd, they named him Govinda. Go means cows and Vinda means to protect. Go can also mean swarga. Without that meaning, Govinda means one who enjoys the position of Indra. With that meaning, Govinda means one who enjoys the position of Indra. Yeah, because then he protects swarga. So then he's protect, because that's what Indra does. But Indra here wasn't behaving in a way that was appropriate. So then here, then Krishna protected swarga by keeping Indra in his place, but chastising and bringing to the proper understanding. Ga can also mean senses. Govinda then means one who protects or nourishes the devotees by attracting their senses. So depending on the position, all these things are used. Sukadeva Goswami continued. That's the beauty of Sanskrit, that it has all these different meanings, and they all connect. That's the perfection, the aparavidya. It's all connected to the paravidya. That's the aspect of the Vedic culture. Everything's connected. Now, you may see it in its connection, or you may not. But the point is it has its natural connection. That's how it expands. That's how it functions. So if you see that, just like we were discussing before, the mind expands from the mode of goodness. So if one sees that, then one tries to create an environment of goodness with which to function with one's mind. Because if the environment is goodness, that being the source of the mind will be more satisfied or more peaceful. Then you'll be able to perform things more nicely. That's what Prabhupada gave us, a lifestyle in goodness, right? Or pure goodness. So that then the mind can be more Krishna conscious. Right.
We take this point regarding mind in goodness and say that different people, they have different conditioned natures which are being purified in the process, but still they remain on different levels, so they can function in different environments.
Yes.
And still be Krishna conscious.
Yes.
What do we mean goodness in this sense then?
It means what's according to Shastra, what's their duties. You know, just like Arjuna on the battlefield and fighting, you know, for a righteous cause, that's the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. Means the environment that he's working in, the ingredients, then you could say those may not be ideally standard, means their use is not goodness. But that the Shastra mentions bows and arrows as the best of weapons, how you're using them, the Shastra, the mantra, the technique, the sadhanas that go with it, in which situation you use what, and those kind of things, then that's all. It's all based on Shastra, so it has its foundation in goodness. But its endeavor or its use may be controlled by passion, right? Or ignorance and destruction, or passion accomplishing. You know, victory then would be the passion. You know, to get victory, you have to kill everybody else, and that's So there's always a mix, but it's going to be how it's situated. But that it's based on, like the musician, their knowledge is based on the scripture, so that's goodness. Right? But their use of it is, you know, the engagement of their senses in that, and their identification with that, so that's the ignorance. But at least the situation is better. You know, it's just like I remember speaking with one good vocalist. Very, very good top vocalist, and he would teach. You know, it was one of those things he would do, because he was from a Vaishnava background, but he had a super excellent voice. So when he was young, he went down to All India Radio. Nowadays, does it even work? All India Radio, is it still functioning? Anyone knows?
It functions.
No. Okay, but before all this internet stuff and TVs and all that, it was the main, broadcast thing as far as sound went, and and that Dur Darshan, I think, as far as the television went. So, you know, of the two, I think All India Radio was much better situated. And so one of the things they did, you know, because it was all Indian cultural stuff and things like that, is music. And so it was a major part of the All India Radio was top musicians. So I don't know about now if they still play, but before, it was very common that the top musicians in India, all the ones you'd hear of in the West and do things like that, they would always be regularly on All India Radio. So one day he just shows up there at the All India Radio wanting to, you know, try, you know, how you say, audition. They can sing, and they immediately gave him an A grading, which is top grading. Generally, people take a long time to get, you know, you start off at B or C and work your way up. He started at A. He was that good. And then after doing that for a while and all that, and then having satisfied that youthful ego, then he decided that devotional service was a bit more important. So then he just, you know, I say, went back to the traditional family practices and all that. So he was saying that one time a top Western musician, it may have been a composer like this, I'm not sure if he was just a musician or what he was, but I think he was German, you know, and so Germans, if they get into something, they take it very seriously, right? You know, very focused and all that. So, but he came to him and said he's going crazy. Because all he can think about is music, but all this Western music is driving him nuts, you know. And this was back when it was less nuts, you know, all the classical kind of stuff. You know, we're not talking about he was a grunge musician or something. We're talking about, you know, Mozart and all those guys. So then, and I'm not sure how it was, he had got some kind of indication from somebody in yoga that maybe he should study Indian music because, you know, it's being situated in goodness, then that will then purify the mind and all that. His craziness will, you know, go down, while the Western being based on all these chords and things like that is more passionate, so that's what the problem. So he started learning classical music, and it did do that. So then what goes through his head all the time was classical music, and then he said he could function. He wasn't going nuts anymore. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that these situations then create what is there. So this is always based on Shastra. So what does Shastra say? How things should be done? Who should be doing them? In what situations? That's the mode of goodness. Like that. Mm-hmm. Now your purpose in doing that may be passion or ignorance, but in any case, it's yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that we're good? Sukadeva Goswami continued, Tumburu, Narada, and other Gandharvas, along with the Vidyadharas, Siddhas, and Charnas, came there to sing the glories of Lord Hari, which purify the entire world. So that means the whole, you could say, what would we call them? Yeah, the whole entertainment industry of the heavenly planets came there, you know. Everybody within the fine arts, they were all there. Because these are the best singers, best dancers, best musicians. They all came. Okay, did I say? Yeah. So they came there to sing the glories of Lord Hari, which purify the entire world. And the wives of the demigods, filled with joy, danced together in the Lord's honor. Right, so they danced in a group. So then that makes it even more interesting. Rather than just individually they were dancing on their own because of happiness, they actually danced as a group for Krishna's pleasure. Right? So it wasn't just the happiness, but it was happiness with organization, because that's what they do. As apsaras, then they dance. They're good at that. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Then a festival giving joy to the universe took place. That is described in three verses. They came to Shakrakunda, Indra Kunda, according to Varaha Purana, or Govinda Kunda, according to Skanda Purana, famous places near Govardhan. So in other words, this has happened before. So in one time they came next to Govinda Kunda, and one time they came next to Indra Kunda. Or then Indra Kunda and Govinda Kunda have both names. Mm-hmm. Either way, however it's... But I think there's a separate Indra Kunda then, isn't it? Yeah, so it's happened at both places. The reason was that they were filled with joy and not because of being ordered by Indra. Right? So they were happy. That's why they were doing it, not because Indra told them to do this. Because we have to remember Indra at this point is feeling a bit humbled. Not necessarily humbled, but humbled. And because of that, he doesn't feel qualified to do anything. So only when he's ordered by his mother and other senior ladies, then he's taking part. And so the others are doing just because of their happiness. Right? So they're expressing that. Tumbura is mentioned before Narada because he was superior in singing. That is explained in Linga Purana. Narada is an eternal associate of the Lord and the best among the associates of the Lord's avatars, among the associates such as Garuda. Right? So all of these associates like this, then he's considered the best. And Tumbaru would be more technically a better singer, so therefore then he sings, because he'll do it nicely. But it's all being done in connection with the Lord, therefore it's perfect. Right? So you have that aspect. But the point is the mood is right, not that he's proud that he's better. Otherwise then he's unqualified. But he wants to do it as a service, so then he's given here. But the fun part is even though Tumbaru may be more expert at doing all these nice things and all that, the actual science of music has come down to them from Narada. But whatever. He was present there along with Garuda and others among the Gandharvas because of the festival of singing. The word Adyaya indicates that Chitrarata and others were also there, right? Because they're also very good. Chitrarata is who Arjuna learned from. You know, so he's his friend. So he's a good singer. Basically, I'd say any of the Gandharvas are good singers. Just that there's among the, you know, the best, then there's the best of the best. Or Tumbaru Naradadaya can mean Tumbaru and Narada headed the Gandharvas. The glory of Indra removed all faults in bhakti up to the desire for liberation. So it can be that Narada is there with the others who are incarnations of the Lord in certain potencies like this and positions of the associates, or it can mean that he's there with Tumbaru, and that they are leading the Gandharvas, so the both of them are singing, though Tumbaru is maybe taking the lead position, Narada taking the secondary, the main vocals, and everybody else is backing. So it can have all these different kinds of meanings, right? And Garuda is there with others among the Gandharvas because he just flaps his wings. Then you get the Samveda. And the Samveda is the source of all the singing that they're doing. So naturally, then he'll hang out with the singers. Right? So that's the fun part. It's Tumbaru singing, but all of his music comes from Garuda and Narada. Like that. Yeah. And then by serving Krishna, then all faults in bhakti up to the desire for liberation are all removed. So whatever there is in the way of being distracted by in interest in karma and jnana, that can all be removed from this glorification of Krishna. Right? So there's nothing left on the material platform of fault. Right? Then higher than that will be then the improvement in the quality of one's devotion. Does that make sense? So that's then what we're dealing with here. We see that the Bhagavatam then deals with that, how to improve the quality of your devotion. First, to give up the karma and jnana, but then how the subtle aspects of how to develop that love for Krishna. Because giving up karma and jnana brings you to the neutral state. Right? You have no desire for these things that will place you in a liberated position. Right? But developing prema means going from the neutral position up to the positive. So, Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The most eminent demigods chanted the praises of the Lord and scattered wonderful showers of flowers all around him. All three worlds felt supreme satisfaction, and the cows drenched the surface of the earth with their milk. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation. and hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. Right? So much is there, but they just hide it. So if now suddenly they find a new vein of jewels and stuff like that, that's just because it's been revealed. Right? They have all this stuff, and it's just that they just produce it as people are qualified. You know, so when the earth is happy by the performance of sacrifice or connection to Krishna, then she gives so much. And if not, then it's not there. And at the same time, she takes care. So, you know, but it'll just be how much is needed. In other words, if the mother's not so satisfied with the children, then they get what they need, but just what they need, nothing extra. And then when she's happy, then they get extra. Like that. O Parikit, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, all living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of enmity. So if Krishna's happy and devotional service is there, even all the bad qualities will go away. We're thinking, no, we have to do something to get rid of these bad qualities, otherwise devotional service can't be performed, but it's actually the other way around. You perform devotional service, all the bad qualities go away. So that if one has that faith, then one can proceed very nicely. But if you think, no, we have to purify the movement, bring out the good qualities, do all those kind of things like that, by that endeavor, then we have a problem. But if we understand, no, devotional service will do this, and we're aware, we're attentive, so that our duties go nicely, we avoid all, you know, improper understandings. Okay? Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, not only good qualities appeared, but natural bad qualities were destroyed. Right? So we're talking about getting the good, but we don't necessarily know how to get rid of the bad.
We see it all going on very nicely, and Indra is there too.
Right.
And his bad qualities were also destroyed.
Yes.
But in just a few days, they all came back? Not all, maybe some.
The point is until you get rid of the desire, then these things will happen. So that's devotional service is the only thing that can get rid of that. But then one has to be putting in some application. So, you know, up to a point, it means he's there. He's done. But we also have to understand his position. We get a little power and we get so, you know, how you say, turn into megalomaniacs, right? You know, but here Indra, he actually has universal power. So it's natural that things go a little wrong. Right? And of any of the demigods, you generally see more stories of him doing something wrong than others, right? Just because of his position. Because it's actually 100 times greater than all the other demigods. Like that, so. This means they all showed dedication to the Lord, even those living entities that were, you know, were bad qualities. Those creatures were famous for innate cruelty by their natures, or which were violent with each other, such as snakes and mongooses. O son of the Kuru, O child, this is said out of great wonder, out of ecstasy of prema. So then the snakes and the mongooses weren't fighting with each other. They were just all remembering Krishna and being absorbed in Krishna. Why did the Lord, who is absorbed in secret sweet pastimes, show powers like this? All the worlds attained bliss because of the nature of this Abhishek. They could not prevent it. Because this is the nature of Vrindavan at all times. Sweet pastimes are only accomplished there. O son of the Kurus, at the time of your birth, there was great bliss also, and lack of enmity, though there was lamentation for the destruction of the dynasty. So when he appeared, he's the last one there, and everything else had been destroyed. Like that. Yeah. So, we're dealing with Vrindavan, the pastime of Vrindavan, that makes everybody happy. That's the nature of Vrindavan. So even though those opulences were there, that's because Vrindavan is actually the only realm that can please everyone. And so then the opulence that's there in Braja, then you start to appreciate. Then those others can appreciate. But in Vrindavan, it's not about the Aishwarya that they're appreciating, it's about the affection. But it has all opulence. It has all greatness. But it's not the focus.
Yeah. We can also say that all those demigods and those who came there, they became attracted.
Hmm.
But they didn't want to change their position.
Well, they can be attracted and see their position as a service to Krishna. You know, like Nalakuvara and Manigriva. Then they saw that their position as demigods, then in relationship to serving Krishna. So they can carry on and do that without a problem. Or Yamaraj, or you know, others, Brahma, they see in this case. So then it works very nicely. But it's not that they have to give up the position. It's just a matter if they see that way. So the problem was, is Indra, then he saw it in that proper way, but then when again something came up, then again he, made the same mistake. But in this case, it was just with Krishna himself. So it doesn't carry quite the same weight as with the devotees. We'll think, oh, with Krishna himself, that would be worse. But actually it's not, because who can be a threat to Krishna? Yeah, no one. So therefore, it was actually less of a thing. And then it's just one, you know, Krishna himself with his wife there in the battle then defeated them all. So then one actually understands Krishna's position. Because he's adjusted Krishna and Braj and all that, but now then Krishna's in Dwarka, and then he forgets, because now he thinks, hey, he's just a Kshatriya. You know, so, yeah.
Manage. Can you say that the position must be acquired by Uttamadhikari so that you know?
The position must be acquired by an Uttamadhikari.
Yeah,
must be.
Yeah, that's a.
But the point is what Uttamadhikari wants to manage the universe. Yeah, so who wants to manage everything, control everything, and get the benefit? Kanistas. So that's who it's given to. Mm. The Uttamas and Madhyamas would rather preach. Mm. And the Kanistas, they want to do the work. Right? Because they identify with it. So therefore, that's why they're given. But they're devotees, that's why it's done. And their potency comes from Krishna. But if anything goes wrong, then Krishna corrects it. So they're very pious, so there's going to be minimal chance for a mistake. But it's not that mistake can't be there.
So the Kanishta has to be submissive to the Uttama. That would be a perfect situation.
The Kanistha is subservient to the Guru, who's representing Krishna. So the point is when that is there, then that works. Right? Because he does have, Narad Muni is the, you could say, the Guru, the demigod, so he could take advantage there, you know, Vyasa, so many other great personalities and sages that he could take advantage of. But sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. So here he's not. It means now he is, during the Abhishek, but before that he's not. And here Indra is, because if all the heavenly singers and dancers are putting on a show, who are they putting it on for?
For Krishna.
Here they are, but I'm saying in general.
Indra.
So now the whole universe is glorifying Krishna, and I'm sure, guaranteed, this is a bigger show than Indra gets. Because they have to fit into his hall, right, which is limited in size. Vrindavan's unlimited, so unlimited demigods could come there and sing for Krishna, and it could accommodate. Mm. So the show is going to be way bigger, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami concluded, after he had ceremoniously bade Lord Govinda, who is the master of the cows in the cowherd community, King Indra took the Lord's permission and, surrounded by the demigods and other higher beings, returned to his heavenly abode. Srila Jiva Goswami comments.
Footnote.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 28 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 19, entitled Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So then, pleasing Krishna, that's the whole point of everything. Then all them working together, all those doing nicely like this, putting Krishna as the center, that's pleasing to Krishna. And that the pastime went on in this way, then that's how Krishna wanted it to happen. So then Sarabi's pleased, Narad Muni, Garuda, all them, they've all come, they've all expressed their love for Krishna, and in that state, then being happy, then it's all come out nicely. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Though he was an offender, his offerings were accepted by the Lord. He bathed Govinda, who is naturally the Lord of the cows and Gokula. By doing this, he did not attain eminence, but produced benefit for the world and himself. His benefit is described. He took permission from Govinda. Previously, he was almost rejected because he was an offender, but now he was surrounded by devatas who accepted him. He then went to Swarga, right? Because they, when Krishna put down Govardhan Hill and that pastime was concluded at that point, all the demigods showered flowers because they appreciated it, right? So then Indra basically was kind of an outcast. So, but with this and his surrender and Krishna accepting his, his asking for being his forgiveness, then the demigods are coming and taking part in this whole festival. But it was Brahma who had ordered the Abhishek with Sarabhi, so it's basically coming under Brahma's order and all that that is happening, not Indra's. So then in this way, after all this, then Indra is then accepted by the demigods and they're going with him back to the heavenly planets. Right? So that's the point, is that it must be done. So it's for Krishna's satisfaction, not for ours. Right? Because if it's up to us, no one can, beg forgiveness enough. No, there's no end to how much we expect or any time we respect. You know, so it's like, let's say it's all been worked out at this point, but later on something happens, we'll bring it back up about the previous one. So that means we haven't actually let it go. Otherwise, if we did, it'd be gone. This would be a new thing. But no, we'll add it on to the previous thing. Yes?
But inverse faults also brought up, usually, in to add to whatever he does next. Like here.
Means it just mentioned that he will do it again. But that's going into the future, not into the past.
But he's reminded next. He is going to be reminded what he did just recently.
Oh, at that time. Yes. But then, you know, it's appropriate. Krishna can remind him and this and that. Because Krishna does forgive, so now he's showing that he's just making a mistake again. But now us reminding, is it, then we'd have to distinguish. Mm-hmm. Is it because of our just trying to correct the person and show them a pattern, you know, or is it because we haven't actually forgiven them fully?
Depends.
Okay. So then that's just the point being made, is that the person themselves will benefit by making that condition, that connection, but they'll benefit more if it's about their benefit we have forgiven, but we're just bringing it up to show them that they have to be more careful. So in any case, that way then everybody gets benefit. Yeah. He then went to Swarga. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after satisfying Krishna, who is the lord of all the cows in Vrindavan, and who is known as Govinda, King Indra took his permission to return to his heavenly kingdom. As he passed through the through cosmic space, he was surrounded by all kinds of demigods. This great incident is a powerful example of how Krishna consciousness can benefit the world. Even the lower animals forget their envious nature and become elevated to the qualities of the demigods. So everybody came to, Indra came to the proper state of mind, all the other demigods were very happy and all that, and Krishna consciousness, even the animals give up their nasty tendencies. So everyone is benefited. That's the whole point. Krishna consciousness then benefits the whole universe. So the more we please Krishna, the more effect it has in that way. Mm-hmm. Chapter 28. Krishna rescues Nandamars from the abode of Varuna. Pratigya. There's no place including Vaikuntha as sweet as earthly Vrindavan. Right? So this is the origin of there's no place like home. Right? Adhyaya Prakashika. The 28th chapter describes the stealing of Nanda by Varuna and Varuna's prayers to Krishna. Hearing what had happened from the mouth of Nanda, the coward men were very surprised. Because of this, Krishna showed them Vaikuntha. Sugadev Goswami narrates this pastime because in telling the story of Krishna forgiving Indra for his offense, he remembered how Krishna also forgave Varuna for his offense. And so that's why it came up. Otherwise, he'd move on to something else. But this came up because of that.
So who was first? And Varuna probably was first.
Who was first? Yeah, no, who was first? Who was first? What's on second?
No, I'm saying that Varuna was first in offending. Yeah? Seems like...
That I'm not sure. Maybe.
Because he remembered this after telling this story?
But all this is happening quite a while after, because there's so many stories. So it's just he remembered it and told the story.
Because the question can be, all the demigods were in that Abhishek, so Varuna was probably also there. So Nanda Maharaj saw Krishna and that's what I was.
Nanda saw.
Because Varuna was still Nanda Maharaj.
But whether it happened in this order or not is another thing. It could have been before, because remember in the stories before, he told some other things, then he went back. So it's just that what reminds you of something, because then it fits, it matches what's going on, the discussion and play and all that. And since, what's his name? Parikit as a king, then they deal with this, with judgments and all these different things. So these kind of things would be very interesting to, you know, a kingly person to appreciate how to deal, what would be the appropriate. Okay.
See, this kind of a pattern, you find it happening in Bhagavatam?
Pattern. Yeah, the pattern is, though, is pride from position.
Yeah.
Right? It means position, opulence is like that. So a position is an opulence, and it's when opulence is there, the tendency is to forget. Mm. Right? Not exactly, but this is getting. Yes, that what do you call it? That slowly creeping winter, you know, breeze hardly moves, but it somehow or another moves the cold very nicely with it.
I meant as much the pattern where should they
the pattern
remembers, you know, about how a particular pastime is related, like Varuna comes up now because Indra.
Yes, no, it's because he forgave Indra and the pastime connected with that. Then he remembered how he had forgiven Varuna. So in other words, demigods getting forgiven for making offenses, then that was what was there.
Yeah. So we have this, you know, throughout. Even ahead for Dwarka Lila also. Kings coming up, then, you know, related kings, and then he remembers the past time, and then he just...
Yes,
you
know. Yes.
Alright. So we see, like, in Rig Veda, like, Varuna...
We see in Rig Veda, okay.
Varuna was glorified very much.
So that you're supposed to add in to give it more weight. You have to go... last week, when I was reading the Rig Veda, then Indra, you know, said, yeah, that's how it sounds.
So, Varuna was very much glorified in Rig Veda. I mean,
he is glorified because he's Indra. But right now, he's not doing his Indra-ness as... See, Indra has his potency coming from Krishna. So Krishna's Indra, and then that aspect, that potency of Indra-ness is given to Indra to... how you say, apply his Indra-ness to organizing the universe. But when Indra forgets that his, where Indra-ness comes from, then that's where the problem comes out. So, but the position of Indra is glorified because it comes from Krishna. That's the glory of it. That's what Rig Veda is talking about. Rig Veda is not talking about the person in the position. He's talking about the potency of Krishna that creates that position and how that position therefore maintains the universe. So it's Krishna who maintains the universe. He does it in this way through the devata, Indra. But it's actually Krishna's potency of Indra-ness that makes that post work. So the same way as Varuna-ness, as Yamaraj-ness, you know, all these kind of things. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Veda is not talking about the demigod. It's talking about... Because that jiva, you know, in another life, he could have been a chihuahua or something. right?
Yeah.
And so the jiva is getting glorified?
No.
And the post on its own just works on its own?
No.
Yeah, so then it's it's what's behind it. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say in the museum, okay? You go into the museum and there's a sword, okay? And this sword is from this emperor of this dynasty, you know, so many millennia ago, right?
Mm.
So is it the sword that's special, or is the person who used the sword?
Yes. The person used it.
Yeah, so that's the point. Now we may talk about this sword is the sharpest, it's the heaviest, it's the longest, it's the most. We may come up with so many things, the ornamentation, the this, you know, what metal it's made out of, and you know, this handle is in this style, and all these kind of things like that. But is that what actually makes what happened great? No, it's the person who used it. So therefore, the particular combination of, what do you say, material elements that is Indra, that's not actually the Indra-ness, that's the Indra aspect that the Shastra is glorifying. It's glorifying the potency of the Lord in which Indra can be Indra. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
But why Veda expressed it with the indirect way?
Because the world is full of people who think they're intelligent and identify that I'm intelligent. So then they can use their intelligence to then speculate on this and keep their intelligence busy, since that's who they think they are. But otherwise, those who understand this point, then there's no problem. And since Indra is doing that work, he becomes glorified along with it. Just like the king who wielded the sword is the actual glorious person, but the sword gets glorified along with it. But it's in actuality the person who carried the sword. Right? Yeah, so that's the whole point. So the two go together. So that's why Krishna doesn't have a problem making that distinction. You know? So Arjuna, he fought. It's Krishna who killed everybody, but because Arjuna took part in devotion, therefore Arjuna gets the credit. Is that... Yeah.
So that's why we see that the literatures like Purana, Bhagavata Purana, is higher than Veda.
It's in that, because it's Paravidya. The Veda is Aparavidya. It's the head of all the Aparavidya. Right? Means the Aparavidya, Paravidya is the transcendental knowledge. And then Aparavidya then starts with Veda, which means the Samhitas and all that. Then Vedangas, and then like Upangas. Yeah? But because many people, why are people here in the material world? To be Krishna conscious? That's why they left the spiritual world to come to the material world. Yeah? They wanted to be Krishna conscious, so they left the spiritual world and came to the material world. No. So, that means then, are people inclined towards being Krishna conscious?
No.
So, therefore, but the purpose of the material world is to become Krishna conscious. So the Vedas have to talk about Krishna consciousness. But they have to talk about Krishna consciousness to those who do not accept Krishna consciousness. Right? So then gradually you try to bring them across. Now if you're just doing it mechanically by the Shastra, it'll take a long time to even be aware. If you have association of devotees, that makes it very quick, because they make it obvious. So the Shastra is talking about Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, you know, pure devotional service, but in such a way that all six schools of thought can find their basis there. You know, all the five levels of consciousness, all these can find. You know, in other words, the Shastra or the Veda is the praman; it's the basis of everything, and everything else is prameya. It's proved by the Veda. Does that make sense? So, therefore, that's why it's written in that way. The Bhagavatam is written for those who want to know about Krishna. Because it has to be written. Because, you know, yes, in the past people then have understood from the Veda, but especially in this age, unless it comes up and slaps you in the face, and even then, you don't notice. You know. So, Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Veta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda Prema.